It's a sign of the times. You can feel it in the air. You can see it on the faces of people everywhere. You can hear it on the streets. You can see it on the news. Lord, I do believe there's a devil on the loose. Boys are running with the guns. Girls having babies too young. Father, leave before they're born. Leaving the girl to mourn. Mothers praying, worried, crying. That their baby's out there dying. Lord, there's a devil on the loose, and you know he's lying. Yes, there's a devil on the loose. There's a devil going wild. There's a devil on the loose for every woman and child. There's a devil on the prowl. He's long overdue, and he's working hard for the souls of people like me and you.
Mavis Staples with There's a Devil on the Loose, and you know it's true. It's from her 2004 album, Have a Little Faith. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and two topics we'll be talking about today. We make a very short perusal of the Caribbean, which is reeling from this procession of hurricanes right through the region. And then we come back to talk about the bully that was in the pulpit. And that's Donald Trump at the United Nations yesterday. Maria is the latest hurricane this season to take dead aim at the Caribbean, sparing practically no island from major human tragedy, severe damage, or, like Barbuda, total ruin with no inhabitants for the rest of at least the immediate future. No inhabitants for the first time in 300 years. That's quite some damage. The hurricanes have bested the island's capacity to respond, but still they try, even though they clearly cannot meet the demand for help. They can't even keep pace with it. As soon as they are trying to get a handle on one thing, up comes another hurricane, and they start all over again. We're watching these things unfold as if there's nothing we can do. But we do have voices, and we must make our voices heard about the need for urgent help to the region. And this is very, very important. Right now, even if you had money, it wouldn't make sense to send it. So we have to wait. Even as we see the suffering, even as people are trying to get a grip on what is going to be the fate of a country, serious damage has occurred. We know that there was yet another round of suffering for Puerto Rico, for the Virgin Islands, slammed with what was described as a cataclysmic direct hit, as well as the U.S. Virgin Islands. Thousands of people are in shelters all over the place. Homes are totally obliterated. The Prime Minister of Dominica has no home right now. He describes the situation as devastation. So things are very, very bad. It is in the Caribbean basin, and the hope is that all of these regional organizations that often have been quoted in connection with economic development and other things, regional development, could come together now as one unit, forget the differences in language, who's speaking Creole or who speaks French, who speaks English, who speaks Patois. This is not the time to get into that. And this is not the time to get exceedingly bureaucratic. The Caribbean, as you know, is famous for moving slowly. This is not the time. So they have to act quickly. They have to speed things up. And other people in the region, there are all these regional associations and organizations that had been formed over the years. This incorporates Central and South American countries. Everybody's going to have to get together to figure out what is the best thing to do. A short-term plan, a mid-term plan, and a long-term plan. There's a lot of devastation. And my heart goes out to the folks in the Caribbean just trying to put things together. And they can't seem to do it fast enough, because as soon as they gain one inch or two in one direction, here comes another storm and destroys everything that they tried to accomplish. We also have awful news out of Mexico City, where a 7.1 earthquake, and some people are now saying it was even worse than 7.1, hit yesterday. And so far, they have counted at least 270 people dead. And they are in the midst of just trying to dig people out and try to figure out how extensive the damage has been. But it was on the exact anniversary, some years ago, another earthquake hit on this that very day. It was really devastating. So the Caribbean is in tough shape right now. And we also have to exercise some patience, because we can't, unless, you know, you have family and so forth. But even so, many people are dislocated from where they used to live. It's a very bad situation. So we have to wait till some kind of a steady situation emerges and people can be located and all these things have to happen before relatives and friends and just well-wishers can figure out how to respond appropriately. So there's nothing else we can do except wait to be told what's the best thing to do. But I ask you, in the meantime, if you can think ahead, and you may want to donate something or some kind of money or some clothing or maybe something that might be useful, shoes, something like that. Continue to think about that, but don't give any money to anybody yet, because we don't know whether it would reach them. And even if it did, we don't know whether they can use it. There's in some places, as I said, Barbuda, there's nobody there. There's nothing there. So we all have to wait. And while we wait, is what I'm suggesting, we can do some work and call up agencies that are in the helping business, the disaster relief organizations, and lobby for swift response to the Caribbean basin and all of these countries that are hurting so badly. And we do something to impress upon them that speed is really important. Call your representatives, your congressional representatives, your local representatives. New York City has a huge population of people from the Caribbean. You call and you impress upon them that this is something so vital that they have to pay attention to it and do so quickly. Because the next toll that will be taken is people are just going to give up. They will despair. And that is not what we want to happen. We want them to know at least that people are trying their best in whatever way we can to impress upon those organizations and agencies and people who can make a difference, that we are impressing upon them and asking that they accelerate the effort, because this is a tremendous blow. I can't even describe to you how much devastation has occurred here. Many people in this region are also dependents of people living in the United States. This is a function of immigration. People are working here to support their families back home. And many of those people are elderly. And if they are cut off from a steady support system, then all is lost. So we have to make an effort. And I ask that in your own way, you try to make some calls, and whether to the city council members of the city of New York or congress members, you know, everybody, look at the widespread here, you know, Spanish speaking, Creole speaking, French speaking, English speaking, Dutch speaking. We're all in this together, and we have to make a strong effort here to make the right calls, to send the messages, and to advocate in behalf of people who are clinging to life. In Mexico, they're digging furiously to just to find people. It is a desperate situation, and we have to do our part. So I urge you to think about that, and I urge you to be activist in your attitude and do your part in making the calls, stressing the need for fast action here. Lives are depending on it. Well, we saw yesterday the bully in the pulpit at the United Nations. President Trump made his debut as the head of state of the United States. And the very first thing he did was to impress upon the 192 other nations attending that he is King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and America rules the world. And, you know, I had a very negative reaction to his speech and its tone. People were impressed. They said, you know, they found him to be strong. Well, you could be strong without being offensive, but he's mostly offensive. And still has not learned, as a man in his 70s, whether he's at the United Nations or just talking regularly to people, that there's a way to talk to people. There's a way to communicate your ideas. And you don't get stronger in the eyes of people by being more and more insulting. But Americans generally seem to approve of a president with the mentality of a six-year-old who proves over and over again that the way he sees the world is the way the world is, and worse, the way the world ought to be. So let's listen to a little bit of his speech. It was a 45-minute speech. We're not going to play the full 45 minutes. That would be torture. But I want you to listen, and we will talk a little bit when he's done. So here's your president. I give him to you gladly. I give him to anybody who will recognize him as your president. Speaking to the world community of nations as it met yesterday.
Terrorists and extremists have gathered strength and spread to every region of the planet. Rogue regimes represented in this body not only support terrorists, but threaten other nations and their own people with the most destructive weapons known to humanity. International criminal networks traffic drugs, weapons, people, forced dislocation and mass migration, threaten our borders, and new forms of aggression exploit technology to menace our citizens. To put it simply, we meet at a time of both immense promise and great peril. It is entirely up to us whether we lift the world to new heights or let it fall into a valley of disrepair. As President of the United States, I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first. All responsible leaders have an obligation to serve their own citizens, and the nation state remains the best vehicle for elevating the human condition. But making a better life for our people also requires us to work together in close harmony and unity to create a more safe and peaceful future for all people. The United States will forever be a great friend to the world, and especially to its allies. We want harmony and friendship, not conflict and strife. We are guided by outcomes, not ideology. We have a policy of principled realism, rooted in shared goals, interests, and values. That realism forces us to confront a question facing every leader and nation in this room. It is a question we cannot escape or avoid. We will slide down the path of complacency, numb to the challenges, threats, and even wars that we face? Or do we have enough strength and pride to confront those dangers today so that our citizens can enjoy peace and prosperity tomorrow? If we desire to lift up our citizens, if we aspire to the approval of history, then we must fulfill our sovereign duties to the people we faithfully represent. We must protect our nations, their interests, and their futures. We must reject threats to sovereignty from the Ukraine to the South China Sea. We must uphold respect for law, respect for borders, and respect for culture, and the peaceful engagement these allow. And just as the founders of this body intended, we must work together and confront together those who threaten us with chaos, turmoil, and terror. The scourge of our planet today is a small group of rogue regimes that violate every principle on which the United Nations is based. They respect neither their own citizens nor the sovereign rights of their countries. If the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. When decent people and nations become bystanders to history, the forces of destruction only gather power and strength. No one has shown more contempt for other nations and for the well-being of their own people than the depraved regime in North Korea. It is responsible for the starvation deaths of millions of North Koreans and for the imprisonment, torture, killing, and oppression of countless more. We were all witness to the regime's deadly abuse when an innocent American college student, Otto Warmbier, was returned to America only to die a few days later. We saw it in the assassination of the dictator's brother using banned nerve agents in an international airport. We know it kidnapped a sweet 13-year-old Japanese girl from a beach in her own country to enslave her as a language tutor for North Korea's spies. If this is not twisted enough, now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. It is time for North Korea to realize that the denuclearization is its only acceptable future. It is time for all nations to work together to isolate the Kim regime until it ceases its hostile behavior. We face this decision not only in North Korea. It is far past time for the nations of the world to confront another reckless regime, one that speaks openly of mass murder, vowing death to America, destruction to Israel, and ruin for many leaders and nations in this room. The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy. It has turned a wealthy country with a rich history and culture into an economically depleted rogue state whose chief exports are violence, bloodshed, and chaos. The longest-suffering victims of Iran's leaders are, in fact, its own people. Rather than use its resources to improve Iranian lives, its oil profits go to fund Hezbollah and other terrorists that kill innocent Muslims and attack their peaceful Arab and Israeli neighbors. This wealth, which rightly belongs to Iran's people, also goes to shore up Bashar al-Assad's dictatorship, fuel Yemen's civil war, and undermine peace throughout the entire Middle East. We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program. The Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it, believe me. It is time for the entire world to join us in demanding that Iran's government end its pursuit of death and destruction. It is time for the regime to free all Americans and citizens of other nations that they have unjustly detained. And above all, Iran's government must stop supporting terrorists, begin serving its own people, and respect the sovereign rights of its neighbors. The entire world understands that the good people of Iran want change. And other than the vast military power of the United States, that Iran's people are what their leaders fear the most. Oppressive regimes cannot endure forever. And the day will come when the people will face a choice. Will they continue down the path of poverty, bloodshed, and terror? Or will the Iranian people return to the nation's proud roots as a center of civilization, culture, and wealth, where their people can be happy and prosperous once again? We seek the de-escalation of the Syrian conflict and a political solution that honors the will of the Syrian people. The actions of the criminal regime of Bashar al-Assad, including the use of chemical weapons against his own citizens, even innocent children, shock the conscience of every decent person. No society can be safe if banned chemical weapons are allowed to spread. That is why the United States carried out a missile strike on the airbase that launched the attack. That is why in the Western Hemisphere, the United States has stood against the corrupt, destabilizing regime in Cuba and embraced the enduring dream of the Cuban people to live in freedom. My administration recently announced that we will not lift sanctions on the Cuban government until it makes fundamental reforms. We have also imposed tough, calibrated sanctions on the socialist Maduro regime in Venezuela, which has brought a once thriving nation to the brink of total collapse. The socialist dictatorship of Nicolas Maduro has inflicted terrible pain and suffering on the good people of that country. This corrupt regime destroyed a prosperous nation by imposing a failed ideology that has produced poverty and misery everywhere it has been tried. To make matters worse, Maduro has defied his own people, stealing power from their elected representatives to preserve his disastrous rule. The Venezuelan people are starving, and their country is collapsing. Their democratic institutions are being destroyed. This situation is completely unacceptable, and we cannot stand by and watch. As a responsible neighbor and friend, we and all others have a goal. That goal is to help them regain their freedom, recover their country, and restore their democracy. I would like to thank leaders in this room for condemning the regime and providing vital support to the Venezuelan people. The United States has taken important steps to hold the regime accountable. We are prepared to take further action if the government of Venezuela persists on its path to impose authoritarian rule on the Venezuelan people. We are fortunate to have incredibly strong and healthy trade relationships with many of the Latin American countries gathered here today. Our economic bond forms a critical foundation for advancing peace and prosperity for all of our people and all of our neighbors. I ask every country represented here today to be prepared to do more to address this very real crisis. We call for the full restoration of democracy and political freedoms in Venezuela. From the Soviet Union to Cuba to Venezuela, wherever true socialism or communism has been adopted, it has delivered anguish and devastation and failure. Those who preach the tenets of these discredited ideologies only contribute to the continued suffering of the people who live under these cruel systems.
All right, that was just an excerpt of the president's 45-minute speech yesterday, but it was an important excerpt in that this collection of points was what impressed people as a very strong, assertive, and very clear message sent by the president to the world, and specifically to the heads of state he was addressing at the General Assembly. I want to ask this question, and I hope you can figure what the answer is. What, if the president were listening to himself, what should have been the very first idea to come to his head as he listed this long series of complaints about these countries and the state of their politics right now and the consequences to the people? What comes to mind that anybody listening to this would find exceedingly ironic? 888-874-4888. You listened, and we heard what he said, but that's just his version. Everybody has a particular point of view about a thing or two. But then come the facts, and he has said that he is a guy who likes the facts. What would you say are the factual bases that could put everything he just said, all these things he recited about how terrible these countries are making it for the rest of the nations of the world, and this vision that he has for democracy, which requires full cooperation from the nations of the world, but it is achievable if they all cooperate and head in the same direction? What would you say? What makes this president's recitation of problems very ironic indeed? Did you pick that up? Do you have an answer? We wait a couple of minutes at 888-874-4888. It was so glaring. All these people who thought that this was such a strong speech. Strong. And Donald Trump, as a result, just crept up in the polls. People loved the speech so much. It's the kind of speech that you get from a leader, for crying out loud. And there he was. He was a leader. He was telling people what the problem is. All these problems we have to deal with now. Terrorism and horrible conditions inside of people's countries. That their people must be delivered from. Ali, you have the answer?
Hi, Utrice. I don't know if I have the answer, but I will tell you this. Everything that that man said is the same thing that the United States goes around and does against other countries.
Right. Let me just rejoice for a little bit here. You are so right. That is the number one irony. Everything he just recited is exactly what the United States did in those countries, creating those conditions that he's now complaining about. You're absolutely right. But I was a little zealous there, so forgive my outburst, but you can hit the nail exactly on the head. Now, why do you think it is that in listening to news coverage, this never came up? You were able to pinpoint it. You were able to make that reference. Why didn't the media make these references at all that you just did? Are you with us, Ali? Oh, we lost. Did we lose Ali? Okay, sorry about that. But that is the point. These things that became the reason for this chorus of support from the media, from the political realm, from experts. This became this whole litany of stuff. This became the reason, essentially, that they went, you know, like sheep. And this is a leader. He spotted the problem. And I was listening. I said, well, surely somebody out there is able to talk about the situation that Ali just, the first thing she said. The United States refuses, absolutely refuses, to admit or recognize, and in fact, explain, come out with it, its connection to many of the problems that we are experiencing in the world today. Trump is now talking about Iran. Well, how the heck did Iran become a major power? What had been the United States relationship with the Shah of Iran and his secret police running around executing people in the street and stealing money left, right, and center? And giving him a place to hide out when the thing got too hot. Who is responsible, chiefly responsible, for maintaining that terrorist in his own land? Nasheed from Westchester, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing, Nasheed?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
All right. I want to know how America itself is being manipulated all kinds of ways with immigration, this, that, and the other. It's the going to work at six and getting off at three, or seven and going getting off at four, or eight getting off at five is all over with. I was in the office with a friend of mine who's a crack carpenter, great contractor. He's not working. What are you going to do about the 37.2% of unemployment in America? This whole dream thing that this man is talking about, they're insane. I mean, I'm old enough to know. Well, no matter what was going on in this country, it's not the same.
I appreciate your point of view, but here's the thing that I wanted us to take a look at today and to see how things are made to unfold so as to confuse people, to confuse your mind. He is in the world community of nations. He's talking to 192 heads of state. And he recites a reality that he refuses to connect to the role that the United States in the initial phases played in creating this mess.
Right.
Now he's blaming people for all the ills of the world, the horrible things that people are doing, and how we now have to band together as leaders of nations to go fight them. But the United States has played a major role in creating these horrors and maintaining these horrors for decades. This is what we're trying to communicate today.
Okay, all right. I'll hang up and I'll listen to what
no,
you do.
No, I want to thank you. You have a good point. You have a good point, and we should, you know, we will be able to come to it. But this was the point I was trying to make. Nobody in the media has said a word about it.
Mm.
They're reporting how strong he was, completely erasing history. But he sounded good. He wants to obliterate, he said he just wants to obliterate North Vietnam, North Korea.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
His sons are not going. He isn't going. You know whose sons and daughters will be going. You see, we have this problem in every single one of the crises that he identified in the little excerpt that I played. Sounded good, but it's the U.S. that created everything he's complaining about today. You know, today it's about these countries that must be put in line. Iran. My God, you created Iran, practically. You created the craziness in Iran and the secret police that went around killing people, thousands of people. You supported them. You trained this troop. I mean, you can't get away from the culpability of the United States and the participation of the United States in some of the most gruesome things that have happened all over the world. He stands up there, has the nerve to stand up in front of the leaders of the world, complaining about these horrible things that must be dealt with now. Who supplied the weapons for the assault on the Iranians? Who supplied the weapons on that? Who supplied the weapons in all of these military actions that he had condemned in his speech? Who did that? Hillary Clinton was recently shown to be, that's why they had Benghazi, to supply the weapons to the people fighting the Assad regime. And she laughed. We came, we saw, he's dead. This is in reference, direct reference to the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi. She arranged it. They played it time and again on the television so we can see her direct role, and still she's walking around here as free as a bird. So the exercise really boiled down to this. We are likely to hear these kinds of speeches. And as I advise you every time, whenever you're listening to a speech, the first thing you do is you analyze the environment of the speech. Why is it being made at that time and at that place? For what purpose? And we see it. all these people in the media today, especially the main media outlets, they know. They know the history. But they are invited to participate in the con game of erasing history so that the vast masses of people will not make any connections whatsoever, and therefore are more likely than not to accept, now you talk about fake history, to accept the fake news that they were given. That's how this goes. And so our minds are misshapen because we have been given information that suits the speaker, but it is not the truth. Michelle from California, what do you think? Michelle? I think Michelle is cranking up a bike. Michelle, are you there? Okay. Well, we gave her enough time to retrieve it. But you see how it is. Right in front of your eyes. In front of your very face, this is going on. And it goes on all the time. An alternate reality is presented to you. And that's what you react to. Michelle, are you there? We're not getting Michelle at all. So, okay. That's what they train you to take, literally take a leave of your mind, a leave of your senses. And all the facts that have been established beyond any shadow of a doubt about everything Donald Trump just talked about. There are books upon books and documentaries and stories that could fill a building. But the president is able to present, this is now an alternate reality, a different accounting of history, in which he exempts the United States from any part in these horrific chapters of history. So that the United States is now seen as a country just basically moved upon. People out of nowhere are doing strange things to the United States. And the implication is that when he gets ready to do whatever it is he wants to do or is going to do, he will have the support of people who are acting literally out of ignorance. You see how it's done? He has used his time to create the case for support for future action that you are likely not to demand questions to. You are likely not to demand answers for, because you never posed a question about it. This is what really upsets me about the role of media. They're not journalists. They're stenographers. They show up, they write what he says, they hand it in, it becomes the official record. Not one person says, well, wait a minute here now. You're going back to talk about Iran? We know that the president, the current president, is very much against Iran. Israel, who he supports, is against Iran. They can't wait to go to war with Iran. So we will set aside all that other stuff. We will cancel out all that history that the United States has with Iran. As an aggressor against Iran. And the person who gave shelter and support to the tyrant of Iran. His whole family. So there's always a different reality, and you will have to learn that whatever it is they say, let them say. Just don't believe it until you have had an opportunity to look into it and check out the facts. And then you go, wow, did the United States really do this in Iran? Did it really do these things against world condemnation? Did it foment all this internal strife and all of this to support the tyrant? Made the bad guy look like the good and the good people look like the bad? Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air. Randolph?
Yes?
You're on the air.
Oh, good. Eutrice, I think a good idea would be to send, I don't know, what, if it was war, there would be no problem about doing this, sending cruise ships to take the people off the island and to support them until things settle down. What about all these naval vessels that could be used to bring food, tents, medical supplies, all the essentials until things quiet down? They certainly have vessels, hundreds of them,
yes,
roaming around North Korea doing nothing except wanting to take over the island and or destroy it. What about these disasters? Why don't they make a difference there?
Well, you know, it's a very good suggestion that many neighboring countries even have a vessel or two that they can use to relocate people. But the emotional impact here has to be considered. Even though many islands have been stripped of anything that could support a decent life, like, you know, pure water and so forth, shelter, ample shelter and so forth, the emotional toll is such that people would rather stay and die there than go away from their homes. And that is a factor that many people have to consider, especially the older ones. They can't even, in many cases, they can't even think of leaving their home. They've lived there all their lives, and that's where they're prepared to just stay there until they die. So the other thing is, in a situation like this, it is extremely important not to overstep your authority. And the leadership must come from the Caribbean leaders. They are the ones who have to step up to the plate and call the shots. And nobody should displace them. They could give advice, they could make suggestions, and they better hurry it up. But they should not replace the Caribbean leadership, the indigenous leadership, by no means.
Right. But this is an emergency, and
yes,
there's no thought of And it's no use drowning in water. I mean, there must be a lot of people that know that once the situation, they're safe and warm and secure, that there will be rebuilding taking place. I mean, humane societies will rebuild and do what is necessary to bring people back to at least even where they were.
You see, their experience tells them they shouldn't readily believe anybody because they've had really bad experiences with foreigners, and they're not too happy about just, they need answers. They need specific answers, and they need to be satisfied that the leadership looks like them, and therefore they can trust them. So,
if they have to send them off to war, would they care about those things?
Well, the thing is, this is where people are now. It was very difficult. In fact, I just read today that 8 more bodies were found in homes in the Keys. These are people who prefer to stay there and die. There's no logic to this, but that's what they found today. 8 people from 8 different houses.
You have to deal
houses.
For the majority of the people. God, I mean, you know, but you can't, you know.
The majority of the people said, well, they'll do the best they can. But we see the proof here. 8 people stayed with their homes. So inexplicable. Your homes are in great distress, a very dangerous situation. They found 8 people today. So there's no rhyme or reason or how or why people feel the way they do. The fact is they do. Even in a crisis, it takes a special kind of handling to get people to go along and to see the logic of acting in a particular way. Thanks so much for calling. That's the end of the program. We're out of time. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis, and we'll see each other tomorrow.
I do believe there's a devil on the loose. Lord, I do believe there's a devil on the loose.